this is side two. When the tape ended, we were talking about the National Women's Hall of Fame in Seneca Falls, New York, and any relationship between the Michigan.
No, we didn't precede them. They established a little bit before us. No, we're not connected with them in any way, although we have, I suppose, in some ways, I visited them very early on when they were just getting established. Actually, their opening, they were connected with a college there, Eisenhower College, was it? Mm-hmm. It closed very shortly anyway after they opened, but they had a great, no, that wasn't their opening, that's when they were declared a historic park, I guess. But anyway, we have somewhat the same pattern, I suppose, in our facility, in that we've got exhibits recognizing the honorees and some general exhibits, and that's their pattern too. They use a different pattern of selection, I think. But other than that, no, we are not connected with them.
Mm-hmm. In the first few years, that when you, what were some of the real difficulties that you faced in raising money for the Hall of Fame? Did you encounter major problems or successes, or how?
Well, it was easier to raise money then than it is now. Mm-hmm. Because then there was money available from the state, mm-hmm. and we did have some money from the state. You could generally count on about $25,000 to $35,000 a year. That was a large contribution, but it was something that you could, that we had anyway, that you could use for operating money, say, that you didn't have to have a special project for. Now it's very hard now to raise any money unless you tie it to a project. Did you know that?
Yes, yeah. I've encountered that.
You probably have too, haven't you? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And there was less fundraising going on. Mm-hmm. So we got from the Gannett Foundation a $10,000 grant before we even had a lease on the house. Mm-hmm. Now, you wouldn't get anything like that today. Mm-hmm. That would be impossible to do. Mm-hmm. Also, there were some other things. Before the failure of ERA, I don't like to use the term failure, but I guess that's what it was, mm-hmm. for the defeat, I guess, of ERA at that time, there was a lot of concern, is concern the right word? You could get money more easily. Businesses, whatever, mm-hmm. would hand over money a little more easily. The defeat of ERA had a really chilling effect.
On fundraising.
Yes, for women's issues. Mm-hmm. It definitely did, there's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. Another thing, while the struggle for ERA was going on, there was a good network out in the state. There was an infrastructure of women's organizations focused around ERA, but they would also participate in helping you raise money. Mm-hmm. See? And they did. We had fundraisers to help us renovate that house that were held all over the state, even in the Upper Peninsula, mm-hmm. because there were groups up there who were just, they were fired up. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were into women's things. Mm-hmm. Well, after ERA didn't succeed, over time, now, that infrastructure is gone. It just simply does not exist. So, and there's been a shift too and changes, I think, in women themselves who aren't aware of the struggles that went on in the late 60s, early 70s, and are succeeding in their careers if they're in the career world and raising their families and are overcommitted and don't have a minute to do anything else. Or if they aren't successful there, they are women who are truly experiencing real poverty, and there are many of them. They don't have the resources. So there are a lot of variables now, and plus, particularly in this state, where everything is privatized, there's a tremendous crunch, pursuit of the dollar by everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then going after the same dollar.
Going after the same dollar. And I know you've sought funds for mm-hmm. your causes too, haven't mm-hmm. you? Yeah. Haven't you found that's
yes.
the case?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And at the bottom of it, anything that has any, I've looked at ladders of where people give. Well, anything that has to do with the history or arts, pretty close to the bottom. You probably knew mm-hmm. that too. Mm-hmm. Anything that has to do with women
it's
is even yeah. below that. So if you want a tough life, you just get started in women's history.
You've seen the growth both of women's studies from from the beginning years. How would you assess the field now?
Oh, I think, as I say, I think that the field has grown a good deal, and I think that it is a firmly established field. It's not going to go away. It has outstanding academic credentials in many, many places. PhDs are being trained that will go out and then be the faculty for these programs. But as I say, what maybe was the philosophy early on that women's studies would be the catalyst that would change the academy. Women's studies never changed the academy. It got changed by it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's still a continuation for the fight for other competing
yes.
dollars and programs.
Yes,
and
that's right. That is still there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What?
How would, on the issue of women's faculty issues, and what changes have you seen?
Now there, I think there is a distinct improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thinking back over it, when I was admitted to the graduate school, to the PhD program, there were very few graduate students who were women, if you take it back to that level. There were next to no married women who were graduate students. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. Very few.
Very few. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a barrier there. I remember applying for admission over the College of Education. I initially started in the counseling program, and I hadn't had much background there, but went through all the testing program. And I remember the interview I had where the person who was chair of the department flew into it. Well, it was a temper fit. He threw all of his papers across the room. I guess you would call that a temper fit, wouldn't you?
I think so. When something starts flying across the room.
I said, I don't care what her interest scores are. I don't care anything. She is a married woman, and we can't place her, and we aren't having her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, the assumption there, she'll go with her husband,
mm-hmm.
and we can't get her into a prestigious spot that will help our growing program. Well, there was another person there who at that time was very powerful. In that field, he was bringing in a lot of federal money, and he said, I will take her as my candidate. So that was how I got there, and then as time went on, I switched away from him and went with Betty Ruskin and other emphasis, but I thought no one would dare to say that to a candidate today.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah, yeah. And they just would not dare to say that.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been, I think, many changes, positive changes for women. Mm-hmm. Women faculty. Well, the battle that we fought on pay.
Mm-hmm.
Salary discrimination was a very real thing. We just never assumed that women were going to make as much as men were going to make.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't happen. So we fought out that battle.
In just
battle
general.
And sexual harassment, which was a real issue in a lot of places. That's ended, I think, too, pretty much. I think it may be ended altogether. But that was hard to end, harder than you might think.
Mm-hmm.
And then women are now accepted, not always easily, but into fields where they never would have been before. We had a talk on Women's Equality Day by the new dean of the College of Engineering, who was recruited here. And she described in very clear terms how she was definitely recruited. The provost wanted her here and went out to get her and brought her from where? Case Western, I guess. Was it there or was it Caroline? I've forgotten. But she talked about... she's much in the minority still as a woman in engineering, but she is there, and she's there as dean.
Mm-hmm.
So even in that field, which has been a male-dominated field, there's tremendous difference. Veterinarian, many, many women students in vet medicine, and many women faculty. So you can look in a faculty meeting now, and you'll see many women, you know, university faculty and younger women.
Mm-hmm.
When I came, you'd see, frankly, hardly any.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The issue of even in the administration, what you mentioned, the dean and engineering, and of course, our current dean in the arts and letters
That's
was
right.
the first female.
That's right.
Wendy Wilkins. And,
yeah.
And
Holmec was,
and,
Human Ecology.
Human Ecology.
That was the place for women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was the place for women.
And nursing.
And nursing,
yeah,
yes, that's right,
college.
Those two.
Yeah.
And for
How about education? College of Education.
Well,
was
they had some,
but
I don't think they
not recently.
No, they did have women faculty, though. As I say, my advisor, Elizabeth Rusk, then went to the College of Education. A member of my committee, Louise Soss, was in the College of Education in developmental psychology, I believe. But she said in her area she was the only woman. I'd forgotten how many men.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just There were not that many.
Yeah, I think Gwen Andrew was one of the first.
Yeah, one of the few.
In a field outside of those that you mentioned already.
Yeah.
In social
science. In social science, that's mm-hmm. right. That's right. And in things like ag econ, mm-hmm. they weren't there. They weren't in places, they weren't in the hard sciences at all. Mm-hmm. Let me see, there was a woman in mathematics, I've forgotten her name, but there was one there. And there may have been one or two in places like biology, but few and far between. Whereas now there are a great many.
Mm-hmm.
And
so that's a change within the
last, that is a change.
That I have seen. Sure.
Yes, mm-hmm. I have seen that change. I have seen many, many barriers to the participation of women in the academic world really come down.
Mm-hmm.
And it is indeed a new world in that sense.
Yeah. What would you say that the source of that change was, were changes in the law, or was it academic governance fostered some?
Well, probably academic governance fostered some, but the law was, I think, a basic thing. You know, you have to have the law to beat on people with sometimes. Yes, and then just constant work, mm-hmm. constant work, yeah, mm-hmm. to do that. Part of women's groups that worked at this, and academic governance, and it was... all of those factors put together, it didn't really come easily.
Mm-hmm. Were you involved in academic governance on campus?
Oh yes, I was, to an extent. I represented the department here. I guess it was the college, actually. I represented the college on the Faculty Affairs Committee for quite a few years. ACFA.
Mm-hmm. On the University Committee on Faculty Affairs.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you do, besides your work at the Michigan Women's Historical Center and Hall of Fame, any administrative work within the campus or in terms of the department? Or
not in terms of the department. As I say, I was coordinator of the Women's Studies program.
Okay.
Yeah. But other than that, I did not do, no, mm-hmm. I wasn't assistant department chair or anything of that mm-hmm. kind. No.
What years were you Women's Studies coordinator?
I'd have to dig out those years.
Okay. And we can look those up.
Yeah, that was before Joyce came. That would have been
in the early 1970s?
No, much later. Much later, but probably mid-80s.
Okay.
Yeah, I think probably mid-80s. Even later, because we'd started on the Hall of Fame downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been mid to late 80s, yes, because, yeah. Anyway. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about teaching, that your teaching experience from the maybe students. Did you see any changes, or have you seen any changes in students over the years? Ones that are coming in, you're teaching in a class right now, even after retirement?
Well, I like to teach. I like, yeah. Oh, I guess the students of the 60s were very different from the students today.
Mm-hmm.
They were much more of an activist persuasion. As the country was, of course. You could have some more discussions of social issues and so forth, which I still think is very hard to get with students today,
mm-hmm.
who either are freshmen and just too overwhelmed by the size of this campus to deal with anything, except how to get from one class to another. As one student told me, I was lost today for a whole half hour, really lost. I think she probably really was, too. She had no notion where she was, have a clue. So it takes a while with a campus this size. But other than that, I don't notice a lot of difference in students. No, they are more, at least the ones I came across, Well, in terms of women's studies, I guess, the students we had when the women's studies movement started, and we started teaching women's studies, these were, many of them were students you could really call feminists. Yes, you could. They were very interested in the feminist philosophy, and they were thrilled about that. Not so much of that today. They're sort of interested, but I'll tell you, they're also very conservative students. It's amazing to me sometimes the interpretations they'll put on a piece of material. go right back more to the 50s than anything else. Yes, they do. Do you find that?
Yes. Do well, you? Not in my household.
No, not in your household, but in your classes, do you?
Yes, yes.
You do too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, almost an ignorance of what went on in that you know, second stage of women's history. Women's,
yes, women's blank.
Feminist,
God.
Nothing there. More interested in talking about the women's suffrage and not what happened since World War II.
Yeah.
In some respect.
Well, we have to take the blame, not us, I don't think, but I think somewhere out there in the educational system, mm-hmm. we have to assume some responsibility for doing no teaching mm-hmm. or including none of this teaching of an important part of our history mm-hmm. For our students. Of course, we teach very little history to begin with, mm-hmm. you know, just very little history. Nothing of that. I asked students today, who are teaching their eyes, you're watching God, if they knew anything about Sherman's March to the Sea. Not only did they not know anything about Sherman's March to the Sea, they didn't know anything about Sherman.
Yeah.
But that's too bad, this loss of historical perspective.
Yeah.
Yes,
or it is. Or they're being taught by a generation of historians who teach it without facts and or, you know,
yes,
or
yes.
shy away from that. Or
yes,
like,
yes,
so
it
dates
is.
Dates and chronology and that, some of that, even though which traditionally was accepted as part of that, given what came before, seeing the interrelationship between some of the major historical themes, students lots of times don't have that ability.
Well, I have not found any who do have you?
Not very many.
Not very many. Very few. Yeah. And it's too bad to lose that sense of the mm-hmm. past.
And for many, World War II marked the end of what they covered in their textbook
yeah.
in high school. So anything recent, or vaguely, if they're teacher had been from been in Vietnam, they maybe talk about that a little bit, but many 20th century post World War II issues are not covered frequently in many history classes. What about the we should talk a little bit about the development of the Men in America course. Were you the driving force behind that?
No, I was not, and I wouldn't even want to take credit for that uh-huh. at all, because Bruce Curtis was really the driving force behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with him, but he was the person who did the major amount of work in designing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame that that course is going to disappear, because there is a real need for that course, and it had just come to the place where maybe it isn't going to disappear, I don't know. You're on the you probably have more sense of that than I do, but it had just come to a place where in the last couple of years it was attracting a really serious kind of student. Some of our best students mm-hmm. were Men in America. They really were
mm-hmm.
serious students who would discuss the ideas. Well, they wouldn't discuss them so much. I found out that was the difference between men and women, that men don't talk very much, particularly in a group. You probably knew that.
Mm-hmm.
No, but I didn't.
You saw the dynamics.
Oh, I saw it completely.
Mm-hmm.
But I just then, okay, if you don't want to do that, well, we'll just do more writing. And so they did. Some of them really have wonderful journals.
Mm-hmm.
I had a student, not last year, but 2 years ago, who never said a word in class, that student. Never a word. But he handed in a journal that won't help your tape, but it was a great big thick journal of just very thoughtful analysis mm-hmm. of the selections, with some personal observations too.
Mm-hmm.
So he clearly was thinking about it. And there is a new book out. I was just reading the review in Nation. What's the name of the book? Are We Attacking Boys or something of that kind? It was
mm-hmm.
not very favorably reviewed by Nation. But anyhow, what the reviewer said was, in this country right now, if we would persevere, we could perhaps truly have a true gender revolution, where we could open up more options for men, as well as for women. We've opened up a lot of options for women, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Women essentially can live a man's life if they choose to, or make the same vocational choices, whatever. I don't know if that's good or bad, but they can. But there aren't really too many options for men.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we are on the edge of that. If we could get men themselves to entertain the possibility that you could live a different kind of life,
mm-hmm.
and it's not an unmasculine thing to do,
mm-hmm.
you know. If you want to stay at home for a while and nurture your children, that doesn't mean you're less of a man,
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Right.
Yeah, but there needs to be a lot of discussion of that and some social support for it. So I hate to see that class go, although I don't know if this is the department where it belongs, but it sure needs to be taught somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But Bruce was the person who really had the ideas behind that.
And then with his retirement, then you took over?
Well, I was kind of, I taught it while he was teaching it. We taught it together. Mm-hmm. So there were several sections offered for a while. And then when he, and then I didn't teach it for a semester or so. Someone else did, and then I became the only person who did, and I was never successful in recruiting anyone else. Mm-hmm. And so I... It's not kind of the thing, right? Well, I don't know. Tom Dean taught it, and he got a job, I guess, tenure stream job, based mm-hmm. on what he did. Mm-hmm. So it is something that you could do.
Mm-hmm. Among our, changing subjects a little bit, among our university presidents, were there any, or provosts, any that you had direct contact with?
Well, through the union, of course, we had. In fact, I was on the faculty affairs. I had a good deal of contact with Lee Winder. Mm-hmm.
And as he was provost at the
time.
Oh,
he surely was. Mm-hmm. And then the program was directly accountable to Jack Kinzinger, who was the associate provost. Mm-hmm. So I had a good deal of contact with Jack Kinzinger. In those troubled times when the university college was dissolved and the university was establishing new directions, which it did, in fact, do.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe Provost Winder's attitude toward University College?
Well, I don't think he regarded it very highly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I don't. I think that his was a traditional model of education going on within the traditional disciplines. Based more on the model, say, of the University of Michigan. Definitely a graduate research model as being the priority. At least that was my perception. Mm-hmm. And of course it was under his administration, his and Cecil Mackey. Though I never knew who was really calling the shots there. He, Cecil Mackey, or the board, or maybe just a group of them all together, who are really redefining the direction of the university, but it clearly was redefined at that time, mm-hmm. at least to my way of thinking.
Undergraduate education in particular.
Yes, I think so. Yes, I think so. Yeah.
The substitution of the integrative studies, both in social science and arts and humanities and that sort of thing, how would you evaluate that compared to what was in place in University College?
Oh, not even close. Mm-hmm. Not even close. What we had in University College was a college that was... Did you ever teach in University College? You
didn't? No, I didn't.
Well, see, what it had, it was a unified thing. That was my perception. Really concerned with the undergraduate. And in the freshman year was sort of a transition year. Students really came as high school students. That's what they are, mm-hmm. in essence. That's, you know, they haven't changed that much over the summer. Mm-hmm. Those students who sit down there that first month or so, they're high school students. But when they left at the end, they were college students. And they made that transition in the first year, the second year here. There was excellent advising. Classes were smaller. The merit system was based on teaching. So people spent a good deal of time with their teaching. They spent a good deal of time with their students. The halls used to be filled with students coming for conferences. That's no exaggeration. Mm-hmm. You never see a student, or rarely, not never, but rarely do you see students lined up out there now, do you? Mm-hmm.
Not that often.
No, sometimes.
With some exceptions.
With some exceptions, yeah, with some exceptions. And there may be more conferring going on over the through the email. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's effective. I don't myself think it's the same as sitting down with a person, but to the generation raised with technology, it may be. I don't know. I wouldn't say that it wasn't. Mm-hmm. But so I say, you see, if you're being evaluated in terms of teaching, that's where you will put your time. And that's where faculty, for the most part, did put their time. Mm-hmm. When we were hired, we were told that's what we did here. And that publication research was a secondary thing. Well, as time went on, even though there were people who did find research here during that period of time, but as time went on, of course, the value system shifted altogether. Mm-hmm. So I think the students lost substantially, but Michigan State couldn't be all things to all people. It couldn't have, this is my analysis, it couldn't have two medical schools, it couldn't have all the development in the graduate program, and at the same time, it couldn't provide the small classes whatever that they were providing for the undergraduate. The undergraduate enrollment could yield some revenue that would help these other things happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it has done that and continues to do that. And it keeps those dorms filled. I don't know if they've got the dorms paid off yet or not. Do they have the dorms paid off?
I think most of them.
Yeah, when they get out from under that debt, that will be a help to them, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's a different philosophy, you know, it's just a different philosophy. I think a student can still get a good undergraduate education here, but I think a student has to be very selective, and I think it's not this place, this institution is not meant for all students. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any other presidents or provosts that you've had any direct contact with?
Well,
Provost Simon, have you dealt with her at all, or?
Yes, I've not as in any kind of capacity, just as a faculty member. I think Luana generally is a person who has the well-being of the institution at heart, but it is, I think she does. She has so the same view. She was mentored by Lee Winder. And I guess Lee Winder is still over the administration building, isn't he? He was last year, the year before last.
In Olds Hall.
Yeah, oh, is it Olds Hall? Because I saw him coming out of the administration building, so I guess he retired and came back too. What does he do over there?
I don't know. Advise the president.
Is that what he does? He's a consultant. Okay. And so her philosophy is the same. And they're clearly building a faculty here of high-powered people. Witness that dean in engineering. That's what they want to do. Right? Yeah, that's their mission.
Central.
And I guess if that's your mission, that's what you do, and that's where you put your resources. Mm-hmm. Now, whether or not that's an advantage, it is, I think, in a sense, an advantage to a student, particularly once the student gets into the upper schools. Then they are well credentialed for the job market, whatever, so it's an advantage to them there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about President Hanna, did you have any?
No, I did as a student. Uh-huh. He was present here when I was a student, but not. I didn't work with President Hanna.
Or the Whartons, or?
I was here when the Whartons were here. Yeah, I was. I was on the faculty when he was here. He was. I think he was a very. He was the real academic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think probably he was closer to the faculty model of what they might want.
Of a university president.
Yeah, a university
rather
president.
Than a manager.
Manager or a fundraiser, yeah. Which was what DiBiagio's strength was supposed to be, and what McPherson's strength clearly appears to be, raising money and building. He's building the university. He's, he's brought all kinds of things here. That's how you do it.
Mm-hmm. In your retirement, recent retirement.
I didn't really stay away. All of a sudden, I was back again.
What are your plans in the near future?
Well, in the near future is to get through this Hall of Fame Awards Day on the 26th of October.
At the end of October.
Yeah, but I'll be at the Hall of Fame for a while yet. But I hope to find someone to be there too, so I'm not tied down to it quite so much. Oh, maybe I'll do a little traveling, and I'm just not sure what I'll do for
you. You'll continue in your work as at the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, but I don't want to be there. I'm there full-time now, and I would like to add to our staff, so I'm not there full-time all the time, because look at this beautiful fall we've been through. It would have been great to have been able to travel out and see the color. I haven't had even one day I could do that.
Mm-hmm. do you have travel in mind?
I may, but I don't have any definite plans, but that would be nice to do some of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Among some of your colleagues that you've worked with, who are some that maybe stand out and have been very influential on you or with you?
Well, of course, in women's studies, I worked with Joyce Ladenson a lot, who's a very fine teacher. Certainly, I worked closely with Jocelyn while she was chair, Jocelyn Slade, who I think did a fine job here as administrator of the department. Going back earlier, is that what you're thinking about?
Anyone that comes to mind that you think, you know, for the record, deserves mention, that sometimes when people are looking at archival records, it's hard to determine who were the important influences and in this case, faculty, lots of times.
Well, I can think of people I wouldn't say who necessarily were important influences on me, but I could think of maybe who were important in this department. Is that?
Well, that's fine, too.
Well, people like Fred Reeves. Has anyone mentioned Fred Reeves?
No.
Well, you know, Fred Reeves was here. He was an outstanding teacher. Mm-hmm. Just no question of that. Jane Ann Barkall, who I'm still friends with, who's had miserable, awful health problems. Mm-hmm. But Jane Ann was, I don't know how to phrase it since she's not teaching anymore, outstanding teacher. Mm-hmm. In fact, on one occasion I went down to the emergency room with Jane Ann. She had some awful problems. And one of the young residents that we met down there came up to her and said, "Aren't you Professor Barkow, Dr. Barkow?" And she says, "Well," he said, "your course was one of the best courses I took at Michigan State." And I think the course that we taught him was that. I say taught, I'm not sure it is since we went to that semester system and they had just the one semester, but for many students I think early on it was. But she was one. Oh, who else? Jane Featherstone here, who headed up the developmental program. Mm-hmm. I worked with Jane. We established a tutoring program. And I think Jane did some wonderful things in terms of the developmental program and students who were not quite prepared. Oh, as soon as I get out of here, I'll think of a whole ton more. Who else? Certainly Phil Kors, that we worked with closely in the union movement. And of course, Phil went on into the dean's office. Chris Bergwell was still here. Chris is